Hey everyone, welcome to episode 47 of Sugidama Podcast, the podcast about Japanese sake, the drink that was drunk by many famous historical figures and living celebrities across the world. But what kind of sake would a fictional character like to drink? And today, we'll talk to a person who has actually thought about it. But before I introduce my guest, let me tell you about our sponsor, London Sake, which has one of the widest selections of premium and craft sake available online today. You can choose from over 100 sake from 25 breweries, and they will deliver across the UK and many European markets. And if you don't know what sake to choose, you can use simple online tasting notes together with very sensible and affordable food pairings to help you decide. What's more, you can get a 10% discount by just using the code SUGIDAMA, all caps, during checkout. London Sake, making sake simple. My name is Alex and I live in London. I am a certified sake specialist, sake judge, sake educator, and sake advocate. Besides this podcast, I have Sugidama blog where I write about all things sake and publish tasting notes, overviews, and information about sake events happening in London. So we are nearing to the end of season 4, and I will take a break after the last episode, which is scheduled for the 4th of May. However, I will continue promoting Sugidama podcast during the break, and here I need your help, my dear listeners. Please share Sugidama podcast as much as you can. You can always share a particular episode you liked on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, or tag me in your post about sake. If you have any comments, again, you can make a post about it. Share the podcast in your WhatsApp or other groups if anyone shows some interest in sake. It helps a lot. As I have already mentioned many times before, the algorithm of podcasting platform is looking at how many new listeners a podcast gets. If the podcast is adding new listeners actively, it makes sense for the platforms to start suggesting it to other users. So together we can bring more people into the exciting world of sake. Just to remind you that I was a guest on Sake Unplugged, a fantastic fellow sake podcast. So if you didn't catch me there, or you are not a listener, find it and subscribe. I highly recommend it to anyone who is interested in sake. Cindy and Julia both live in Japan. Julia is a Kurabita, a sake brewer, and knows sake from the inside. Cindy is a certified sake sommelier and sake expert, and she travels extensively across Japan, discovering a lot of interesting stuff about sake. So look up for Sake Unplugged and subscribe. Okay, today is the last episode of the Sake Around the World miniseries. We started in December in Birmingham with Sam Bolton, flew virtually to Hong Kong to talk to Eric and Will, then to New York to meet Tim and John from the amazing Sake Revolution podcast, and stopped in Paris to talk to Tony about Sake in France. And today we're back in sunny England, the northern part of the country, and we're talking to Jamie Ryder, who is a publisher of the fantastic Yamato magazine and author of a short story collection, Transmutations, a hospitality copywriter and marketer, and of course, a certified sake sommelier and international kikisakishi. And we're going to talk about sake in Manchester, Jamie's home city, and play an interesting game which involves sake and famous fictional characters. So without further delay, let's listen to my conversation with Jamie about sake in Manchester.
Please welcome our guest.
Hey Jamie, how are you?
I'm great, Alex. Thanks a lot for having me on the show. It's been great to follow Sugidama for quite a while now. I'm glad we finally managed to actually get together for a proper conversation about one of my favorite subjects ever.
Yeah. It's great to have you on the podcast. We've been talking about it for probably for a year since last year, but finally, it's good. So why don't we start with you telling our listeners what do you do, how you got into sake, and story of your sake journey.
Yeah, happy to dive in. So really, it started from quite a young age with Japanese culture, because as a kid, I loved cartoons and anime and all the typical things you think of with Japanese stuff as a kid. That was a great gateway. And then as I got older, the culture and the language just really fascinated me. But to this day, I've still never been to Japan. But I always wondered to myself, if I could not go to Japan yet, then how could I bring it to me? So I started writing about it. And that is where my publication, Yamato Magazine, came from. Through writing about the subjects with the culture, the philosophy, and the food and drink, that is how my journey with sake started, particularly in Manchester, where I'm from. And I remember going to a tasting run by a fellow called John Callow, who runs quite a big sake training organization in Manchester. And he really helped to bring the world to me, really broke it down, and it fascinated me. And that was the rabbit hole then, where I thought, this is amazing and I just want to learn so much about it. And then I started writing reviews and just building my own education, which eventually led me to want to learn about it professionally. So did a couple of qualifications with the Certified Sake Sommelier Association. And very recently I passed the Kiki Kaseshi course as well, which was a great learning experience. And that just really, again, helped me to improve my knowledge and just try to, you know, bring more awareness to it, particularly in the north of England as well.
So what do you do in terms of sake, apart from Yamato Magazine, which is amazing, quite like it, what else do you do in this field?
Yeah, so I'm very focused on combining it with my interest in marketing, because professionally I'm a copywriter. Mm-hmm. And to me, producing the written work and the copy to actually help sell sake and other drink brands as well within these niches that I like to focus on, I think is very important, because obviously trying to bring more awareness from around a quite a niche drink anyway, it's not always easy, but then translating it into written work that actually manages to get across the benefits, how it tastes, the ingredients and the storytelling around it, I find that really fun. And as an example, I have done a bit of work with London Sake. I've collaborated with Sorakami as well on mm-hmm. in an online sake tasting as well, just to do these different mediums as well. And I'm also trying to bring it out in more creative work as well. Earlier this year, I published a short story collection called Transmutations, and mm-hmm. there is a sake story based in there about a female sake brewer who literally took over her family's brewery and wanted just to bring it out, and trying to break it down in a very fiction-based environment, and the storytelling aspect there was really fun to write. But again, it's just great to expose that world in a very specific medium as well through the written word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting. It's fascinating that you use creative power to, you know, to bring more sake to people in terms of, I guess, awareness and probably emotional connection, which is what we need. Yeah, it's quite cool. So do you remember when you first tried sake, any kind of recollection of what it was, what you felt, and...
Yeah, it's really interesting to me, because I admit I did come from that initially sort of ignorant standpoint of just thinking it was like rice wine, and I think that's okay for just the general overview of it. But once I did like an actual tasting, then it really broadened my mind to the complexities of it. But what really grabbed me was that wonderful contradictoriness of it, where you think it's one thing, but there's something else entirely. And I think the sake that really got me into it was from the Akashi Tai Brewery, their Tokubetsu product, because the flavors and the profile really appealed to my taste. I find them quite like sometimes on the sweeter side, but also on the quite dry side. And I find that had a particular great combination for me. And then by trying different English-based breweries that seem to have more of that focus on the Western lens through the writing and how they managed to make that more aware, that really helped me get to grips with the different categories. And then that helped me to obviously lead me towards the education standpoint as well.
It's quite interesting that you mentioned Akash Stai, because I was doing interview with Sam Bolton from Birmingham, and he said that the first brewery he visited in Japan was Akash Stai. Yeah, so it's amazing brewery, and they've got very good presence here. So I was wondering, when you were writing things about sake, I remember you were writing a series of pieces when you imagining what kind of sake different characters and people would drink. How did it work?
Yeah, well, this dives into my very nerdy background now, because I did mention pop culture is a big thing for me, particularly superheroes and fantasy characters. And again, it's interesting trying to reframe the conversation around the topic that might, you know, baffle a few people. But to me, the series in Yamato magazine, Flights of Fantasy, was that, because I found fantasy characters, they can be quite accessible, particularly from how we've seen in the last few years with things like Game of Thrones, The Witcher, that kind of thing. So I tried to imagine what kind of sake these particular characters, or what kind of shochus they would like, for based on what I thought about their personality, because I thought it's no point just trying to mash together random pairings if they don't have any particular story there with those characters. So, for example, one of them was Geralt of Rivia, who I'm a big fan of with The Witcher. I imagine what kind of sake he might drink, and with Daenerys Targaryen from Game of Thrones as well. An example for her was Black Dragon, because to me, you know, she's the mother of dragons, so clearly with that dragon connection, that makes sense straight away, and it tells that wider story with the drinks, but also pairs it with this quite interesting topic at the same time.
Mm. Yeah, it was quite interesting. I think it worked very well. So you start thinking, you don't always agree with some pairing, because we all have probably slightly different image of these characters in our minds, so, and different types of sake they might like. But yeah, it's definitely a thought-provoking series, which makes, I guess, if you like these characters and never tried sake and you read it, you probably think, okay, I also want to try, and what I want to try, probably I start with this recommendation. And yeah, it's a good window into this sake world. Yeah. So you are from Manchester, you live in Manchester, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So how is sake scene in Manchester? Because I remember when I got interest in sake a few years ago, London sake scene was pretty, I wouldn't say boring, but not very diverse. There were a Japan Center, which was probably the main store where you could buy sake, and there was very limited range of that. Of things there, but now it's like a booming. We've got so many shops opening, there are a few bars now opened. You can see sake not only in Japanese restaurants, but also in some non-Japanese. So it's definitely a lot of development happened in the last several years. So how is things in Manchester and in Northern England?
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, because I found it's quite similar in the sense that it started off quite slow, but lately, over the past couple of years, it started to grow quite a lot, which is great to see. And a few places that stand out to me, I'm always going to reference the Sparrows, which is probably the best sake shop in Manchester at the moment, and they do a very interesting pairing with Polish and Tyrolean food, run by a powerhouse of a lady called Cassia, who's doing some great things. And I believe that she's also trying to turn that space into a wider sake bar as well. I believe something called Monkey Trio has come out recently as well, which is in the development for being another independent sake bar. There's Peter Street Kitchen, where I have spent many a great sake tasting nights, where there's a mix of Mexican food and the sake bar as well. And I think a brand new Japanese concept has just opened called Musu, which is more high-end kaiseki kind of food. And I have yet to look at the menu there, but I believe they will start to pair some Japanese drinks there as well. So looking at 2 to 3 years ago, to see how the scene has started to develop quite quickly has been really amazing to see. And I mentioned John Callow before as well with the Northern Wine School. He's doing a great job of educating people up north as well by doing tastings and such. And for me, with Yamato magazine, it's great just to have that wider publication where I can continue to write and champion my hometown, because I do like to just plant my flag in the ground and say, more sake outside of London. It's not just in London, it's building all over the country.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, because, I mean, we were so London focused in many aspects. So it's very important to understand how things are outside London, and just to be aware that in London, it's not the whole Britain. It's just a part of it. And I wonder, what is the sake awareness? How would you gauge it in like Manchester or Northern England? How much people are aware of sake? Is it still very exotic drink, or people got some understanding what it is but probably don't drink, or people probably looking for to find something interesting?
I'd say there's like a curiosity and an open-mindedness, really, and I'd probably say that more from the northern perspective, really, because I do find we do tend to be generally quite curious people anyway, and efforts are slow, but with the things like that Cassia and John are doing, by doing what they're doing and having these open spaces, that is very useful. And just from my perspective, just having a conversation with anybody to say, have you tried sake, or is it something that you might think of like wine or spirits, or trying to calibrate it to their taste buds? Having even one of those open conversations really makes a difference, I think. And then obviously you can just try to help people feel comfortable around the drink that makes sense to them, and then make it analogous to the sake.
Okay. So how do people usually drink sake? Do they drink it at restaurants, or they buy sake and drink at home? What do you think?
I think most people are trying to still try it in Japanese restaurants, really. And what comes to mind for me is Manchester's Chinatown, because we have the second biggest Chinatown in the country. And of course, that is a good place just to experience like Asian culture from all over the spectrum. And sake does feed into that sort of dining menu as well. But what I am finding as well in a place called the Northern Quarter, which is more of like the trendier side of Manchester, that's where I think sake could do quite well as well. That brings to mind another restaurant called Cottonopolis, which is in the Northern Quarter, which is, again, quite high-end Japanese, but that's a great sort of for that particular demographic, because in Chinatown you tend to get, you know, quite different people, but in the Northern Quarter you tend to get a younger variety of people as well. And I think that is probably key generally. It's trying to make it more open for people in a younger demographic, maybe Gen Z or millennials as well, and then they can influence other people as well, because that is where the bulk of more the interesting or the quirkier stuff is going on in the Northern Quarter.
Interesting. Sugidama Blog. Okay, before we continue our conversation with Jamie about sake in Manchester, let me remind you about London Sake, our sponsor, and their huge selection of curated sake sets, which provide a great opportunity to explore various styles and types of sake. Have a look, but don't forget about the magic word Sugidama, all caps, to get you 10% discount. So, do people in Manchester got any preferences in terms of sake? Because if you look at Japan, and there are so many prefectures there, and sake might differ from prefecture to prefecture, because like in Niigata, it's clean, dry style, while in some other areas, it's more like a savory, sweeter style. And it depends on the probably local food, local people. How does it work like that in Manchester, in the north of England?
I think it's all subjective, really. But really what comes to mind for just, you know, my northern taste buds, I think we tend to have quite like a crisp style. So what really stands out with Manchester about me is we have a lot of craft beer breweries. I think we are one of the biggest northern cities who have different brands, and trying to have that more drier taste would probably apply to the Tanrei Karakuchi style with Niigata, for example. So personally, when I make recommendations around my friend group, that tends to be what I would always recommend. You want to try something drier first because it might calibrate more to what they're used to, and then it might be something you want to go on with like a sweeter Ginjo, or just, you know, take them along slowly. That's certainly what I've observed anyway.
Have you noticed any trends or any other observation about how people drink sake, what people say about sake, or I don't know, what people perceive sake?
I still think it's quite too early to tell what people think of sake on a local level, because there's still so much work that we can all do. But generally, from what I've already said, I think sake is mostly best served right now by pairing it with different things as well, with the sparrows, for example, with that Polish food and that Japanese lens as well, or it is just having a shop that's purely dedicated towards it, because it might seem like a bit of a novelty at first, but it will still, you know, try to attract people because it's still quite a small thing and part of the hospitality scene at the moment. But as people learn more about it through various publications or they do different tastings, then I think it's just going to go from strength to strength and then catch up to London eventually.
yeah, definitely. So do you think, you mentioned that there are a lot of craft beer breweries in Manchester. Do you think we will see sake brewery in Manchester? Because we've got one in London, we've got two in Cambridge. So do you think we will see something in Manchester or Liverpool or in the north of England?
Oh, well, personally, I would absolutely love that because I would never leave. But yeah, I think if I was thinking more of a northern demographic, then perhaps it might be better in Liverpool because you serve closer to that water source and just more of the ingredients. Though, you know, time will tell. I think it's purely about getting the bar scene up to snuff first before a brewery would come along.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it would be cool to see something, because obviously one of the things very interesting in sake is that if you look at like a terroir, which is a very controversial concept, it's a controversial in wine and it's even more controversial in sake. If you heard, like if you listen to Sake Deep Dive podcast, you probably know a lot of people, there are people, there are breweries and toji in Japan who believe in this concept, and they believe that if you use the local grown rice, local water, trying to make sake to pair with local food, what was always the case, it's sort of terroir. It fits the terroir concept. So it would be, I mean, with rice, probably in 50 years, we can't grow rice in Manchester, I guess, given that rate of global warming. But but in terms of water, it's definitely, it's quite interesting to see sake made with local water and obviously by people who know their consumers much better than anyone else. And they might think, okay, we probably want to make this kind of sake for our drinkers. Yeah, it would be quite interesting. Okay. So what do you think about how the sake scene will develop in the future in Manchester? What do you think will appear or what will change? And in your opinion, what are the main barriers for sake? What obstacles for sake to become more widespread?
Yeah, to me, this is a question that I ask myself a lot, really, and people in the Manchester scene, because I think it is really the more universal barriers that we all face in England. It's the education first, because people still need to be aware of what sake is as well, of the price point as well versus wine, because obviously typically it can be seen as more expensive than certain wines sometimes. But what I would love to see is more of the you know, more cost-effective sakes like Futsushus in the supermarket. I think that's a great way because then you can just compare it to, you know, your bargain basement wines, but still have that same home-led experience. I'd still love to see more bars open up in Manchester. I mentioned with the Sparrows, when they get their space up and running, I think that can be an ideal place to have events that are not just about sake. It's that's like adjacent to it. You could have creative events, you could have organizational events as well. The Northern Wine School, I think, is going to continue to grow and offer new education programs as well. I think we still need a lot of great educators who can bring their own perspective to it and championing it in their own way. But generally, I'm very positive about it because obviously with London, that's great that that's developing. But I think outside of London, I'm not too sure what it's like in Birmingham or Sam's neck of the woods. But up north, I think Manchester is probably flying the flag for it at the moment.
Yeah, given that the sake education is quite big in Manchester, it's definitely quite an important part of the sake scene in Britain now. I think so. So I was thinking if we, it's a bit like a sudden, a bit like I would be surprised, but would you like to play a game? I will say the sake type and you think of a character who would like to drink it. So it would be
a great game. Yeah.
Yeah, let's play it because I guess it should be interesting. Okay, let's start with Futsushu.
Oh, nice. That off the top of my head, I would say Wolverine because the reason is because he's a quite rough and ready superhero, but Futsushu traditionally, it might be seen as rough and ready, but it's got, you know, you can be surprised from the complexity of a good Futsushu, and Wolverine is the same with his character. You think he's one thing on the surface, but dive much deeper and there's a lot more complexity there.
Interesting. Yeah. What about Nigori?
Oh, good one. Yeah, that is a tough one. Nigori.
Yeah.
You know what? The X-Men superhero Emma Frost comes to mind there because to me, Nigori can seem as quite silky and elegant, and Emma Frost really exudes those qualities as well, particularly from the prestige that she tries to bring into the world as well. And she's just a really interesting character to dive into. Same with Nigori as a category.
What about Namazake?
Namazake. These are the hard-hitting questions, Alex. Yeah, I'm going to have to think about that one.
Okay. Let's do Koshu.
Koshu. Aged. Yeah, another good one. For age, I would probably say a superhero who's quite an elder. So I would say Captain America because, again, quite complexities around Koshu, but because of his age, Cap has had a breadth of experience. So you could say he's a well-aged kind of superhero, and obviously Koshu is a well-aged kind of sake.
Yeah. So the last one, Junmai Daiginjo. Let's do that.
Daiginjo, yep, high quality, getting that quality together. There are a few ways that I could go around this. But off the top of my head, I would probably go back to Daenerys again because it is that high quality. You might associate it with royalty, for example, because it is that premium quality. So, yeah, Daenerys or probably many monarchs within pop culture.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. It's quite fun. Okay, so what are your plans? What are you going to do in the next year? Because we basically, I don't know when this podcast is going to be published, this particular episode, but in 2023, what are your plans for 2023?
There are a few things that I'd like to do. So I'm going to look to do more tastings myself and champion the scene through collaborations with the Sparrows in particular and trying to write about it as well. And I can't really reveal too much about this at this time, but I'm also working on a new creative project where sake will be mentioned as well. So that continues to champion it in that respect as well. And really just continue to grow my education really, because doing the Kiki Sakeshi course earlier this year was really great for my own learning and knowledge. But again, there's just such a infinite rabbit hole of possibilities that I can continue to grow with. So I'm really excited.
Yeah, it's quite exciting. I hope that 2023 will be a much better year for sake than 2022 because we are still recovering from all this COVID lockdown and some kind of economic woes. So I hope that 2023 will be much better. At the end of interview, I usually ask people to recommend one sake to our listeners. So would you like to make any recommendations?
I would indeed, and I have the perfect recommendation here. You won't be able to see it on screen, but here we have the Ozeki Hana Awaka, which to me is such a great story there with the taste and the brewery. Ozeki itself stands out to me because it comes from the sumo world of being the second highest achievement or rank in sumo, I believe. And the wider story of that brewery really stands out to me because it's that idea that there's always room for improvement. And I think that is what the Ozeki brewery reflects in their philosophy. When I first tried the Hana Awaka, I got like such a deep dive of flavors, really. I found it, you know, quite perfumey and sweet. So it would definitely put it in mind of like a Prosecco, for example. Though now that I tried it before the podcast, just to get my thoughts together, it's completely different, actually. It was actually much drier. So again, that is a great example of how sake is just such a shape-shifting kind of drink. You think you know it one way, but then you get hit over the head with a completely different interpretation. I would also recommend anything from Akashi Tai, because that was the brand that got me into sake anyway, and they have never brought out anything bad in my opinion, so that is great. And for now, that is pretty much what I would talk about. But one more thing is the Black Dragon as well, which I mentioned with Daenerys before, because the story behind that is great. And I've really had that appeal to my drier taste buds as well. So if you're more in wine for like a white wine or maybe something more like a dry Prosecco, then that is highly recommended.
Yeah, yeah, it's great recommendations. And I think you're absolutely right. So if you think you try sake, one particular, you know, sake, and you think, oh yeah, I know it, and then you try it in a few months later and it's different, it's slightly different, because probably temperature is different, or probably occasion is different, and you feel differently, or food different. And it's amazing thing about sake that it's every time you sort of make a discovery, which pretty cool. Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, it was fun to talk to you, and I definitely wish you all the best with your creative projects, and I'm looking forward to new things in Yamata Magazine, and I definitely would like to probably meet up at some point when you're in London. We can have there are a few places when people now can go and have a cup of sake and enjoy it. Yeah, thanks a lot.
No, well, thank you, Alex. Again, I've had a great conversation today, and I should say, keep doing what you're doing with Sugidama, because there needs to be a lot of, there will never be anything wrong with having much more educational-based platforms that accept creative work, and it all contributes towards that wider cause of just trying to champion a very niche drink and just, you know, putting your flag in the ground and sharing it. So thank you for this podcast as well.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks a lot. Bye. Oh, let me just stop the recording.
That's it for today. I'll be back with the last episode of the season. In the meantime, follow Jamie's recommendations. You can buy sparkling Ozeki Hana Awaka, any Akashi Tai sake, or Kokuryu Black Dragon Junmai Ginja, and see if you agree with Jamie's description of them. Don't forget about London Sake, which sells a lot of various sake to continue your personal sake journey, and you can get a 10% discount using the word Sugidama. And if you buy anything there, play the game we played with Jamie and try to think what fictional character would like to drink that sake. If you are thinking about what sake to buy, look up the tasting notes section on my website, sugidama.co.uk. I'll keep adding more sake there. If you have any questions or suggestions about any sake topic, just drop me a line. My email address is alex@sugidama.co.uk, or you can tag me on Instagram at sugidamablog in one word, or on Mastodon as well, where I am at sugidamablog@universeodon.com. Again, if you liked the episode and want more, hit the subscribe button, and you will get every new episode downloaded to your player as soon as it's out. If you would like to give me a bit of support, please leave a review or rate Sugidama Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podchaser, or any way you can do it. And I will repeat, please share this podcast with your friends, on your social media, chat apps, anywhere. The more new people start listening to Sugidama Podcast, the more actively the podcasting platforms start recommending it to other listeners. So it's the best way to bring new people to the world of sake. Thanks a lot for listening. Kanpai. Sake, sake, sake. Sugidama blog. Sake, sake, sake. Sugidama blog.